FS Tech is where restaurants and tech connect. Discover what's now and what's next in food service technology and how it affects your business. Taking place from September 19th through 21st in Grapevine, Texas. Register today at www.fstec.com.
How do you create a restaurant chain in a time of uncertainty? Hello, I'm Jonathan Mays, Editor-in-Chief of Restaurant Business, and in this week's episode of A Deeper Dive, I speak with Jack Gibbons, the CEO of Concept Incubator FB Society, to talk about restaurant development. FB Society, formerly known as Front Burner Brands, is known most for creating Velvet Taco, which has since been sold, though FB has an interest in the chain and is a licensee. The company under Gibbons has created several other full-service and fast-casual brands, including 60 Vines, Mexican Sugar, Whiskey Cake, and Son of a Butcher, among others. Jack talks about how FB Society thinks when it creates a concept right now and what things they consider when developing full-service and fast-casual brands at a time when things are so uncertain. We also talk about consumers' continued desire for service and the demand for high-quality restaurants right now. We talk about what kind of takeout considerations full-service restaurants should have and whether fast-casual concepts should focus on dine-in business at all. Jack also takes some time to talk about how best to win the labor shortage and about rethinking unit economics when everything costs so much. It's a packed interview this week, so please have a listen. All right, we are here with Jack Gibbons. Jack, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thanks for having me.
Super. So tell us a little bit about yourself and FB Society.
Sure. My name is Jack Gibbons. I've been with FB Society now for 14 years. And really, FB Society is kind of an incubator company. We create brands. So our sort of mission is to have the courage to help people have experiences that they've never imagined.
Mm-hmm. So how do you see the operating environment today?
We actually see it as for the existing brands that we have, very strong. I mean, there's a lot of growth going on in the industry right now. And, you know, people are receiving unique and special brands really well. As far as new brands, I think people are looking for the next new thing. I mean, it just people want to try new experiences and, you know, get out of the house.
Mm-hmm. Is that what's driving some of your sales at your existing brands?
I think so. I think we're most of our brands are lifestyle brands. People are looking for experiences. I really believe that. Our company is kind of organized in a way where we have really three type of restaurants or hospitality venues. We have food halls, which are fairly large and are multi-venues. They have really restaurants within restaurants. Some we operate, some we outsource to local entrepreneurs. We run the bars and the music and the entertainment. Then we have full service polished casual restaurants. For example, like Whiskey Cake, 60 Vines, Mexican Sugar, Ida Claire, Haywire. And then we have fast casual, which we have Son of a Butcher. We're still investors in Velvet Taco. We created Velvet Taco a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. So is it sort of Velvet Taco sort of spun off at this particular point, or how's that relationship? Or are you just
It's been sold. The majority is to private equity, and they're growing it in a really effective way and have a great team, and they're really doing a great job actually.
Mm-hmm. So when you are looking to create a concept, I wanted to talk, you know, sort of about, you know, concept creation in the future. And what do you think are the key elements you think that a new concept is going to need to succeed down the road?
In every brand we create, we use this idea of DNA. And DNA for us stands for not deoxyribonucleic acid, but actually differentiators, nuances, and attitudes. And we're not a Me Too company, so we really try to create a space. We look for some blue sky where, you know, there's something really differentiated about it. You know, it's got a good business model. It's something that we feel is scalable and unique.
Mm-hmm. So what do you mean? Like, in it, to me, like, the unique is a tough thing to do these days, because there's literally like hundreds of thousands of restaurants out there and so many different types of concepts. I mean, how do you know that a brand is truly unique enough to resonate with consumers? I mean, how are you able to accomplish that?
Well, let's say, for example, like, there's themes, like, if you're, you know, right now, I mean, what our kids are getting taught in school, what older people are getting kind of brought around to learn about is how to make the earth last longer and be a better place. So, you know, recycling, finding ways to be a better steward is a big theme. And one of the ways that we feel like we've, you know, really impacted the industry is through this brand that we created called 60 Vines. Mm-hmm. And the mission of 60 Vines is really using keg wine and making it available to customers. It's really unique because the restaurant has to have a special relationship with the vintners and the farms where it's grown. And really, for every keg that you use, you save such a large amount of bottles and corks. And so it's really like, I think within a brand, there's got to be a story, there's got to be a theme, there's got to be a reason that it should exist. And if you're making the world a better place, that's one good place to start, you know?
Mm-hmm. So how did the idea for 60 Vines come about?
So 60 Vines is about a 6 or 7 year old brand for us. We have 5 of them now, and we have 3 under construction. It really started around this theme of keg wine, which, you know, it delivers a really unique product to the consumer. And the consumer wants to have a product with less sulfites, that's potentially more organic, where it's from, and to do it in a manner that's not wasting a lot of bottles. And you think about it, for the people who are actually shipping it to, the cost of shipping individual bottles, and it just in general, a really good business practice. We thought that, you know, also is our lifestyle, that, you know, again, how to make, you know, more recycling, and how to just make the earth a place we're proud to leave our kids. So that's really how the idea started. It was only really being done locally in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And the idea of doing it in Texas and creating a brand that would really popularize that type of wine drinking and bringing it across the U.S. was something that we thought was some really great blue sky. And then how to put in themes like local art, you know, really cool design. We build a greenhouse in every one. And the other thing about it that's kind of interesting is our brands kind of play together. So we put one 60 Vines on the rooftop of a food hall in Nashville that we own, and it just really turned out cool. So we really love that idea of, you know, just finding spaces that are unique. And it isn't easy to do, because you're right, there's thousands of restaurants. So you really have to think deeply about and be real with yourself of what's different to what you're doing to what everyone else is doing.
Mm-hmm. How are you able to get those deals with wineries to source wine kegs? I can't imagine that there's just a lot of infrastructure for that sort of thing, that they were necessarily ready for that thing, or am I wrong?
No, you're right. 7 years ago was crazy difficult. Mm-hmm. We would meet with vintners, and you know, these are guys that they're afraid of moving away from corks, they're afraid of change in general. But you know, over the last couple of years, there's been a lot more transparency in the wine business as far as what's actually going in a bottle and what the business is all about. You got this, like, young winemakers coming up who are really into fresher wines that are you know, really healthier for people and not hiding a bunch of you know, purple ingredients and sulfites. So as that was changing, the timing of it over the last few years has been really brilliant, because these new winemakers are really into this. And you have a restaurant that's literally selling, you know, thousands and thousands kegs of wine. It's far more effective for those winemakers to get their real wine without manipulating it into bottles. So it was actually difficult at first, but over the years now it's super easy.
Mm-hmm.
Now the infrastructure is everywhere.
Yeah. Now, do you tend to focus more on casual dining or fast casual at this point when you're looking at developing a concept?
So we're kind of doing all. We have some of our CEOs, you know, run, you know, full service restaurants, and some run fast casual. And certainly in the food hall business, we're always looking for not only our own ideas, but whatever market we're in, who's the hottest fast casuals in those markets to bring them into our food halls. So that's something that we're kind of like, I guess we're kind of like industry nerds. We just study the business and pay attention to everything going on and what the trends are.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is the future of full service?
I'm a lot more probably positive on it than other people, because I find that if you're a chain that hasn't changed in years, you're declining in business. But if you're somebody that's kind of reinventing your business, I think the consumer's really excited about it, and they just love to be around a local business that's thriving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tend to view the industry, and I've said this before in the podcast, is I tend to view the industry sort of going in two different directions, in more aggressively than it was. It was going this way before the pandemic, but I think it's gone even more aggressively that way, where you're just going to have a certain segment of the industry that is going to be more towards this production, get people in and out quickly, don't worry about things such as seating or anything like that. It's just a takeout focused, efficient, almost a manufacturing operation. And then the other side of it is that people really do want service. So I was at, like, last night, my family and I went out to dinner. It was a Monday night, so we're recording this on a Tuesday. So a Monday night, and on balance, not really the greatest night for restaurants, man. We have a hard time finding things that we could get in relatively quickly, because we wanted to go to a nice restaurant. We had a limited amount of time for reasons, and it was really tough. I mean, we were finding like hour plus long waits and a ton of demand. And that's something that we've seen relatively routinely at, you know, really interesting local concepts. So to me, I think that there's definitely a future for really good full service dining.
There's no question. We find that people want, if you are going to take your family, right, that's kind of a special time for you guys. And, you know, do you want to go to some cheap place and just go through a commodity experience? Or do you want something that you actually think a chef is spending some time working on the food, and, you know, a person that actually, you know, cares that you're there and wants to have you have a great experience? I just think that, you know, it's got to be intentional. The people that are doing that right are hitting it out of the park. I mean, we're finding new records every week in our restaurants on volumes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. People definitely want to celebrate. They want to go out and still enjoy themselves. You know, I mean, and for all the challenges with the economy, people, a large percentage of the population is still actually spending money, and they like to do it at really good restaurants and have a good time doing it. Now, when you're looking at a fast casual concept, do you have to consider, or a full service concept, do you have to consider like takeout technology when you're creating it? Is there something that you do these days to make sure that you're accounting for that element, or is that not as necessary as I think?
Look, in the scale of things, it's not as important. You know, it's going to basically make up a small part of the revenue. So, you know, does it have to be addressed, and do you want to do it in the right way? Absolutely. But if you're building a restaurant to be an experiential restaurant, there's so many other things to focus on probably before that, you know, and even in technology in general is going to be rampant through the whole business. But, mm-hmm. you know, if you decide to do to go, you should do it, and you should do it and focus on packaging being right and on brand. And I think in creating concepts, people tend to be myopic and focus on one part of it, where, you know, and actually if you're creating a brand, you got to be soup to nuts. You got to think about everything from who you're hiring to how you're organizing to go, to how you're delivering the food, to how you're, you know, making every touch point that a guest has, you know, something that really says, hey, this is something special that you're getting tonight.
Mm-hmm. So you do a lot of food. How many food halls do you guys have?
We have two right now. We have one in Plano, Texas, and we have one in Nashville, Tennessee.
And how are those doing at the moment?
It's unbelievably great. The one in Nashville, Tennessee, I'm actually going there this weekend. It's the CMAs, and got huge performances on our rooftop, and you know, it's a whole integrated plan with the city, and it's really exciting. But we're right at Fifth and Broadway, and We've got about 25 stalls, a gigantic music venue, 60 vines on the roof. It's the future of, you know, what food halls are going to look like.
Mm-hmm. Now, what kind of concepts do you have in the food halls? Do you get existing concepts, local concepts? Do you create your own? How does that work?
We do a little of all. We have local concepts in Nashville. We have Prince's Hot Chicken, which is the founding, you know, family that created hot chicken in Nashville. And we've got a great stall, and we've got everything from, you know, shawarma to every local thing you can think of. And then since we have a license for Velvet Taco, we license Velvet Taco in some of our food halls. We do some original concepts in the food halls, but first and foremost, we try to get local talent.
Mm-hmm. So when you're looking to open, what were kind of the considerations when you're looking to open a new food hall? I'm kind of curious about that. What do you look for in a site and in a location?
Well, if you think about it, you know, Dallas, Texas is probably one of the hottest business, you know, communities and state, like just cities right now in the country. And so there's a certain density. We're actually North Dallas, which is really on fire with, you know, some of the big companies that have moved to North Dallas. And then when you think of Nashville, especially off of Broadway, I mean, it's one of the densest, probably one of the best locations in the Southeast. So I think having a location that gives you a lot of traffic and visibility is probably the number one thing, you know, design and keeping it experiential. You know, I think that live music, exciting concepts. I mean, all those things make it an experience. So that's why people come back frequently.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you adapt those at all to take out and delivery, or how does that work?
We do. We, like, I'd say overall, it's not the same as say a brick and mortar, but you do get a lot of to-go and a lot of, it's just a little harder to use it that way just because of the areas that they're in are not as conducive to pick up, right? But for, you know, basically having a place that you'd have to park and go get it, we do more than I thought we would do, you know?
Mm-hmm. Why have we, you see a future where we sort of merge the idea of a food hall and a ghost kitchen? I mean, it seems like in some respects it's heading into that particular direction where do we ever see a future like that? Because that seems like that would seem to make sense, but right now they almost serve two different populations.
Yeah, they're starting to actually merge together. There's groups that are doing that right now who are basically doing walk up, you know, food halls that have a virtual component to them as well. And I think there's, I'm sure that if a place is underperforming, it would be the first thing you'd probably do, you know? So yeah, I could easily see those two things merging together.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that, that kind of goes though to one of the earlier thoughts, because if you're building a food hall and you're building it to be an on-site destination for consumers, that's in some respects, in the way things work today, that's a very different mindset than a ghost kitchen, which again, a lot of those are about efficiency and about getting people in and out quickly. Whereas if you have seats and you have, you know, or you have, you know, you take orders to consumers, it seems it's almost like two different things. And even the location might be different.
Yeah, I think that's really true. I just think that, look, in creating experiences in a food hall is not widely done. I think there's like, it's such a fragmented business across the US and it's such an opportunity. And, you know, your purpose is to, you know, be efficient. You're not going to be an experiential, you know, consumer facing kind of business. So I think there's always a percentage of business that you could pick up through to go. But I mean, if you've got music, if you've got, you know, entertainment around your food hall, it's a different experience. You know, you really want people to hang out. You want them to have some cocktails. You want them to just, you know, have fun and experience the whole thing, you know?
Right, right. Sure. So let's talk a little bit about fast casual, because that's one where when we talk about these issues, it's almost in many respects stuck in the middle, right? I mean, many fast casuals were built with the idea that you eat on site, that it is a destination in many sense. Not all of them, but a lot of them were built with that idea. And of course, the pandemic completely changed it. And many of these concepts have had to rethink what they're doing to the point now that many fast casuals look an awful lot like fast food restaurants. So much so that I completely want to ditch the terminology, but that's an entirely different podcast. My question to you is, like, how do you think about fast casual going forward? Is it still going to be this idea? Do you still have to think about this as, do you have to think about it differently now after the pandemic?
Yeah. Yes and no. I mean, I think that so there's these companies, that huge companies like Chipotle that now is putting in drive-through lanes, right? And they've got these whole separate kitchens. And you know, I just think that that's that they are they've gotten faster. You know, they're pre-cooking. They're doing a lot of that. You know, our experience is more, you know, kind of say like Velvet Taco. We have another fast casual that we're growing out of Texas called Son of a Butcher. And no, they're more about how to get better food and cook to order and make it a special experience. So I think there's maybe another category or something that's kind of coming in there where you can get better in-class food. And it's not just the commodity of somebody, you know, slapping chicken on a tortilla and saying, hey, you know, I've got your food ready, you know?
Yeah. But how do you avoid that temptation to sort of go towards bad others? I mean, like, look at fast casual pizza as a perfect example where all of these concepts were built as an on-site destination. They were built for the, in part for the experience of built making your own pizza. You go and you eat it fresh. And it, they were deliberately not supposed to be like regular pizza concepts. And then so many of them have started moving towards larger pizzas, delivery. Some of them are putting in drive-through windows. And we see that across the category. How do you avoid the temptation to sort of shift your concept from the sort of destination quality food thing that was supposed to be to, you know, how do you avoid the temptation to move towards the fast food model?
I think some of it is like, look, I think even those places you're describing, they're still widgets. They all have the same ingredients. They all have the same thing where, you know, a lot of the to me, the better in class fast casual restaurants, they're always coming up with new items. They've got weekly features, which, you know, you don't see in a fast food place, or they're doing, say, unique tacos, or they're doing new sliders, or they're doing something every week that is showing that somebody's actually working on things and there's a uniqueness to the business as opposed to, you know, just the rote, just making the same thing over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk quickly before we go about the operating environment. Like, how are you seeing, are you able to, how is, where, what are your thoughts on labor at this particular point? Your concepts able to get people?
Yeah, I think in general, you know, labor's, I think more than people realize, a bigger, you know, result of just culture. Like if you have good culture and managers that actually like know everybody's name and talks to them, I think that turnover is not near as bad as you think. And so we've found that, look, we could always use more people, but we don't have a dramatic problem that we're having to shut down like other places or shut down huge parts of a restaurant because we don't have enough staff. So we're finding that we're just doubling down on our people and just really, as with our growth, it's actually attracting new people. So we're not really having huge labor problems.
Yeah, yeah. It's not really rocket surgery fixing the labor problem. You just have to, A, treat your employees nice. You have to make sure your managers are trained. Well, that's like super important because like nobody quits a job, they quit a manager. And you know, I mean, you have to pay competitive good wages and treat people well and have a good culture and you're going to be fine.
It sounds easy, but you know, we hire people every day. And so how do we make that day that we hire you special? We have a lot of programs that we put in play at one of our restaurants. That's kind of a farm to fork restaurant called Whiskey Cake. Every employee that we hire, we give them a plant. And it's their job. We keep it on in the restaurant and it's their job to nurture it. And, you know, while they work there, they that's their plant, you know. And so we have another restaurant, Haywire, that anyone who comes in and applies, they get the elk tacos. So unless they're a vegetarian, of course. But, you know, and even if they don't get hired, the idea is, you know, we're a friendly group of people and we want you to come back and we want you to experience a little bit of the restaurant. And I just think you gotta, you know, if you're doing what everyone else does, you're gonna get the results everyone else does. And mm-hmm. I'm always thinking about how do we do it a little different, a little better, a little more special, and make it a little bit more unique.
Right. So what about supply chain? How are you, what are your food, what's your food cost outlook? You have any issues on that?
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple things. I think that, you know, up to this point, and I think we're at the point now, you know, the consumers had a little flexibility on pricing. You know, I don't think there's a whole lot more, you know, when it comes to elasticity, but you know, up to this point, it's now it's kind of how does it all move forward on food cost. But at the same time, I think that, you know, in general, we're opening a lot of restaurants. We're running into, you know, probably bigger problems with just supply chain and materials and being able to open restaurants for, you know, equipment. We're having really long lead times, which are adding a lot of cost to restaurants. Construction costs are way up. So I think the existing restaurants, we're actually pretty happy with performance. What we're probably our biggest challenge is in a growth right now is just how do you take these additional costs and, you know, work out a pro forma and a business model that absorbs 30% more costs is probably a bigger challenge right now.
Right, right. So are you concerned about how consumers are going to react to pricing going forward?
Yeah, it's like some of these construction costs, it's not exactly, you know, these are new units, so you can't just put it onto a menu. So it's something that, you know, the business has to decide, is this something that's an equitable investment and a return on investment that we can live with, as opposed to maybe, you know, before when it was 30% lower before COVID or during COVID. You know, now the supply chain is just so far behind and, you know, it's going to catch up. It's going to catch up at some point, but you know, is this for 3 months, 6 months, a year? You know, I mean, I can't tell that in my crystal ball yet, you know?
Yeah. Has it slowed your growth at all?
No, I mean, it really hasn't. I mean, it's just kind of really coming down to, as we probably have about 8 or 10 units right now that are in a pipeline that you're looking at the next 5 and saying, hey, do I really want to, you know, every time I buy this equipment, you know, 6 months or a year before I really need it, it's just costing you a lot more money.
Mm-hmm. So, but it's, and you have to sort of figure, you have to kind of rethink sort of how your economic structure.
Yeah, you have to be willing to say, okay, I'm in this for the long haul, or, you know, this is going to be, you know, last 6 more months and then we're back into, you know, things are getting back to normal. So, and I'm not quite exactly sure where that is, but it's something we think about every day.
Right. Super. Jack, this was fantastic. Really appreciate you joining us this week on the podcast.
It was really nice talking with you, Jonathan. You have an amazing day. Okay. Take care, buddy.
And that should do it for this week for A Deeper Dive, which was edited, as always, by Kimmy Kazmarek. Artwork by Nico Hines. You may find this on other episodes of the podcast on our website at www.restaurantbusinessonline.com/article/deeper-dive. You may also find them on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. I'm Jonathan Mays, your host, podcast producer, and the editor-in-chief of Restaurant Business. Thank you for listening.
FS Tech is where restaurants and tech connect. Discover what's now and what's next in food service technology and how it affects your business. Taking place from September 19th through 21st in Grapevine, Texas. Register today at www.fstec.com.